say is I'm going to come up with a new opening song for this. Don't show me this. This is Pure Decking number 210 for Thursday. What the hell is today? March the 17th, 2096. I am Morps. I am wearing a Batman t-shirt, and tonight I am drinking Blackheart Spiced Rum. Static, what are you drinking and what are you wearing?
Nothing wearing, except birthday suit. And Kurt and Sweeney 12-year Dominican nice. Rum.
BSV, same question. What are you drinking? What are you wearing?
I don't know, and water. Pick which one goes where.
He didn't even look. He just grabbed something out of the closet, put it on. His grandmother's very confused about where her blouse went. Madman.
I'm drinking Cold Snap. I'm wearing a wife beater, Marvel boxers, and blue jeans.
Suave.
I am not drinking anything because I am currently heavily medicated, and I am wearing a pink tutu and licking a lollipop.
So. Oh wow, that hurt. So you're in a pink tutu and you're licking Butch's dick. Got it.
At least that's what Butch is imagining while he's watching the webcam footage.
Oh, I need the fail sound. I haven't had to load the failed sound up in a long. Hugo, what are you drinking?
I am drinking milk stolen from cows, and I am wearing jeans that still barely qualify as pants.
Oh, well, okay. So, it got the essentials covered at least. That's always good. And I see the chat room is enjoying this. So, anyways, Hugo, glad you're not dead. I haven't spoken to you in a long time. So,
I am also glad I'm not dead.
I think it's been like 2 years since you've been on the decking.
Probably, actually, that works out because it's been about a year since I started this job. So, yeah.
Yeah, because I think the last time you were on decking was right before I moved, and that's been almost 2 years, so. Anyways, I can't find the fail sound, so I'm going to stop looking and roll straight into a story I wanted to discuss first, which is this one. It's from the Korean Times. So, the gist of the story, I'm not going to read the whole thing for this one. The gist of it is that Korea is making a very, very hard push to go cashless. They're talking about if you go in, buy something that's 9,500 won, pay with a $10,000 won note, instead of getting your 500 won back, they're going to give you a prepaid card for that. They're expecting credit cards, mobile phone payment, and bank accounts to completely replace cash. And they go on talking about how the article goes on talking about how there's several other economic systems that want to go cashless, and they just kind of acknowledge that for the convenience of it, we might have to put up with some monitoring and IT issues. So I guess my biggest problem, I mean, I'm not against going cashless. My only problem with going cashless is, what do you do if the power goes out, or worse, somebody hacks your accounts? You've got no backup, no way to store money away from.
Write a check.
What percentage of your cash is cash now?
Very little. I mean, I keep less than $100 in my wallet. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah, like we're already essentially cashless. Like,
I mean, I keep about $40 in the wallet, and the only place I use cash regularly is church and dealing with dealing with people, not businesses. So. But even then, that's not that often. So,
with the card readers that are now on phones, it's becoming easier and easier to give to pay with cards on individuals.
So, I don't know.
There's always going to be a need to transfer wealth without infrastructure. There's always going to be street vendors or drug dealers or you name it, hookers, whatever. You need a way to transfer wealth without infrastructure. And if you don't have a card reader, you got to do something.
So what do you do if you So, I mean, the whole reason they want to do this, obviously, so they don't have to print money and handle money. Yeah. They think it's going to be a substantial savings. And there's also the benefit of making it more difficult to do transactions under the table, since you could literally audit every transaction. But if that's the case, how do you stop criminals from, say, going and buying X amount on a, I don't know, Visa gift card? So, you know, instead of registering, you know, are you going to make somebody register every gift card, every potential container of money to an identity?
I think that's going to start happening, because I bought a Visa gift card one time. I don't remember which company it was with, but yeah, I had to go into a website and actually register it to an address before it would let me use it.
Really? Well, I mean, they were used for fraud a lot, so I guess it's not that surprising.
But how easy, though, is it to register it to your neighbor? Or yeah, some true. Random address, you know? There's no fail-safe check, you know? Like it would be one thing if you had to register it and then you had to wait X number of days for them to verify you are where you say you are. Kind of like, you know, registering for a website and they send you an email and you have to click on the email link in order to register. Something similar to that. They send you something in the mail and you have to reply back from that mailed address.
Well, but this is happening in Asia, right? And there are large portions of people in Asia who don't actually have addresses. They live in cafes and hotels and basically move around.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not. I wouldn't say it's a large percentage of the population, but it's a number of them.
They could easily link this to like the enhanced ID system that they were trying to do in Europe not too long ago.
Yeah.
Still doesn't give a good answer for the black market. You know, they're almost going to have to go back to, like, you know, gold coins or something like
barter,
that. Like,
yeah.
Something that actually has value in what you're passing on.
I'm not
Two
sure.
Words. Bitcoin.
It doesn't take a lot to register a business name, and most businesses are never audited. So Joe's Bait and Tackle could be selling crack. And so, we already have it where strip clubs, on their receipts, it doesn't list like the Pink Pony or whatever, just because businesses do take their clients there, and no one wants that on Google spreadsheets for their corporate expenses. It says a steakhouse name. So we already kind of cover that electronically with existing businesses that are legal.
It's still a paper trail. Like, if I were doing something that's criminal, I would not want any form of paper trail, even if it was under a fake identity or something like that.
Well, you know, technically, I mean, Hugo mentioned Bitcoin, and, you know, sure, I enjoy Bitcoin as much as the next person, but even every Bitcoin transaction is auditable. The difference there is it's difficult to necessarily tie them back to identity.
So 2 points. One, I'm surprised, Morbs. You know, the level of paranoia that you have typically, and you don't keep more cash on hand, that's surprising to me, one. Two, yes, but what if people have bigger guns and more guns?
Well, I can anyway. Only, you know, I've got two hands and three guns. I mean, it's not likely that I'm going to be able to handle more guns than that at the time. So that's when tactics come into play and train.
You haven't trained the cat yet. Got it.
True.
Oh, God. If you can train a cat to use a gun, the world would be dead.
I've been trying, but every time he fires the shotgun, man, the damn thing flies across the room.
Start with smaller weapons.
The second point, though, is what about Joe Smith, who has, you know, $10 million buried in the backyard? What happens to him?
The $10 million gets phased out as he's spending it.
At some point, if he doesn't turn it in, they'll just declare money worthless. It's fiat currency now. The only reason it has any value is because the government says it does.
And phasing bills out isn't that difficult. Have you looked at a bill from 1901?
Yeah, they're different. I mean, they replace them over time as they're used. But, I mean, old bills still show up in circulation. So.
It would just get spent, sent to the Fed, and then never released.
I don't like it because it gives, again, too much control to government.
It might work in South Korea, but it won't work on this side of the pond because we have a group of people called survivalists who won't go for it.
Oh, I'm not even thinking it's survivalist. If you look at Asian countries, they're highly homogenous. Mm-hmm. So there's a really, really large amount of trust in a highly homogenous group. In the States, we're not that homogenous, and we're becoming less so all the time. Individual different groups aren't as trustful of outsiders.
Yeah, there's that.
I still predict that even over there, you're going to see, if they were to get rid of all the cash, you'd see a resurgence of something that would replace cash in black market stuff.
It'd be those gold coins from the John Wick movie. I mean,
yeah, probably, like something like that.
You can really identify what cartel you work for by the money you're using.
You could go back to private banking. For a long time, banks issued cash.
Yeah.
And how much cash was worth, depending on how trusted the bank was. I mean, Canada didn't have a centralized banking system until after the Great Depression. That's one reason they fared so well. The banks that were crap went down, and there just wasn't a lot of crappy banks, because with banks competing for issuing currency, they had to be trusted by the populace.
So, I don't know. I mean, I'm still kind of mixed on this. I like the option of using something physical that's not calling home or being traced, or, you know, if I had to go out and meet, you know, Madman on a pig farm to bury a vacuum cleaner, you know, I could just, you know, hand him the money as opposed to, you know, having to invent that he bought something, you know, from me.
Yeah.
Oh, I purchased a vacuum cleaner. I can't help that it was leaking raspberry syrup at the time. Defective vacuum cleaner.
So, you know, it really just comes down to, I mean, but even then, okay, illegal activity aside, you're going to have privacy advocates who don't want to go electronic everything. You know, I mean, if everything can be audited, you're going to have people who maybe they're not doing something illegal, they're just doing something unsavory. We mentioned strip clubs before. Or, you know, maybe they're ordering shit from the internet that they don't really want to advertise. You know, maybe they're huge into anime, and they're having an entire collection of these little figurines, and they don't want to admit it. But if anybody, you know, if you can go pull somebody's financial records, and you imagine that at the job interview? So, we see you spent $1,000 last year on DVDs and dolls of little girls. I mean,
if you're purchasing it on the internet, how are you doing cash now? Just want to kind of ask that one.
Fair point.
A lot of sites you can send checks to.
But so. Checks are still auditable. Most checks aren't even processed as paper checks anymore. They're scanned and ran as a debit transaction.
I mean, I'm kind of looking at it as slippery slope, and I know that's a logical fallacy, but we're dealing with people, and people are not logical, so I feel like it's a fair logical fallacy, at least with regards to policy. I mean, am I reading too much into it?
I'm still seeing a lot of ways of just the black market surviving using digital currency. Simply because it's so large, how many people are going to get popped? If the country can only take down 10% of it, that's not a very large percentage. It may still be thousands of people, but we just audit so little of what we already do. I don't see it as a problem.
Well,
and the black market's the only one that would have a problem with it.
You know, I didn't do the story because I didn't think it was very relevant last week. But they up in New York. Well, we talked about it, but we didn't go into detail on it. Up in New York, there was a guy who got caught up in one of the wiretapping schemes. And it was basically they wiretapped his shit because he was from not the United States, somewhere in the Middle East. Damn it.
Uzbekistan. We'll call it Uzbekistan.
No, it was like Libya or something like that. But anyways, he just got caught up. He hadn't done anything illegal, wasn't a terrorism suspect or anything. And basically, his wiretap tripped all the right keywords, and so they just turned it over to the FBI, and next thing the guy knew, he was arrested.
Oh, wow.
So, You know, that was I just want to know how they got
a wiretap on him without probable cause, because I'm seeing that's the issue, not the auditability of currency.
Well, that was the story last week about, you know, them not, you know, about them not hiding the fact that they were using Prism for, you know, domestic cases that had nothing to do with terrorism. It's like, yeah, if they see something weird, they're just going to turn it over to the FBI. They're not even going to bother. We talked about this. Static was okay with it. Static was strangely okay with it, now that I remember it. He was kind of gleeful about it.
Hey, you know, if you're doing something wrong to begin with, you deserve it, whatever you get.
So.
Yes, but when everything is wrong, how do you not do something wrong?
Well, not everything is wrong, though. That's the thing.
There's a lot of whim laws, though.
Sit at home. Do nothing the idiot box doesn't tell you. All right, let's go on to this next one here. This is from Ars Technica. Big name sites hit by rash of malicious ads. I know this because I was been a good chunk of last week dealing with the fallout from some of this shit. Mainstream websites, including those published by the New York Times, the BBC, MSN, AOL, there were several others, are falling victim to a new rash of malicious pop-up ads that attempt to surreptitiously install crypto ransomware, the Aurora rootkit, by the way, and or Angler exploit kit, I'm sorry. Tainted ads may have exposed tens of thousands of people over 24 hours alone, according to a blog published Monday by Trend Micro. The new campaign started last week with when Angler, a toolkit that sells exploits for Adobe Flash, Silverlight, and other widely used... Netflix. Another widely used internet software started pushing laced banner ads through a compromised ad network. So what happened here was it was a crypto locker... it wasn't crypto locker. It was one of the other... crypto locker clones. It was version 3 of it, though. But it was a crypto locker like Tesla Crypt. It's Tesla Crypt 3.0. I had to clean up a couple of machines. Anyways, not so much clean up as hand the hard drive back to the help desk and say, yeah, burn it with fire. If they need their shit, too bad. Check and see if they had shadow copies on. If not, well, sorry. We're not paying for it. But, yeah, I did actually get to tell the help desk to burn hard drives. It was great. Unfortunately, I think they just formatted them. I was being literal. It's like, no, I don't want to see this thing on the network again. But they formatted it. But anyways, so what somebody did was instead of trying to hack MSN, AOL, the BBC, they hacked the ad agency. And then installed ads that had Angler in them. Because a lot of these ads, they're just doing a like an iframe or a like an HTML import or something, or a PHP import or something along those lines to display the ad. So a lot of times banner ads are actually Flash or HTML or, you know, shit like that. This is actually why I always tell people to run Adblock. I don't give a shit whether you've got, you know, the banner ads flashing around your desktop telling you to punch the monkey or whatever the hell. It's because they're not – the ads are a common source of – I mean, malvertising's a thing. But somebody actually hacked a big-name ad network and got onto all – the New York Times. So.
And, like, really, like, if you go to the New York Times and you see an ad, you were going to think that's a relatively trustworthy ad. You would think that, you know, they'd – Well, okay,
the BBC,
maybe not.
Well, maybe not MSN and AOL, but there were several other news websites that are considered trusted that this ad was showing up on. Here we go. Newsweek, The Weather Network, Xfinity, Realtor.com, NFL.com, MSN, Newsweek, The Hill. I mean...
From what I understand, they were actually like basically buying up expired domain names that had previously been used in advertisement agencies, so they were on whitelists. I had read another article earlier in the week, and I think this is the same thing. This is just kind of getting more into the technical aspect as opposed to the why or the how. But yeah, I'm pretty sure they just bought up expired domain names. I think they were looking for domain names that had the word media in them.
Well, I mean, yeah, we figure out a pattern, right?
We actually got hit by this at work. And funny story, our IT department didn't know what to do. They had never encountered this sort of thing before. And our IT department, which is a large corporation run by a city, didn't know what to do. And so I was talking to them because one of the affected computers had a bunch of really important shit on it that we couldn't lose and wasn't backed up to the network because it had just been made like moments beforehand. And so I was talking to IT guys and like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. You give me a copy of that data. I'll put it on my personal computer and then I'll sit and physically type it into another computer so it can't infect it again. IT guy says no, because we might reinfect the network. I argued about it because like I'm like, dude, it can't. But then after, you know, I seceded and was like, okay, fine, we'll lose the data. But you got to wipe our phones then. Well, the virus won't affect the phones.
Bullshit. But
when we resync our phones, our email is on our phones. Yeah, frustrating.
I have been told multiple occasions to reach into people's email accounts and delete shit because of that very reason. Same thing. Nobody else where I work had even a clue what ransomware was. I mean, they knew what it was, but they had no idea what to do with it.
Oh, so, that's terrifying.
Yeah, they don't turn the machine off. They don't tell the guy, you know, quick, turn it off. They let him sit there and try to, you know, uninstall shit. You see all the attempts they made at virus cleaners and everything else. And it's like this thing is sitting live on the network with them doing this and nobody telling me.
They didn't at least unplug the network cable and just, I don't know, deal with it on its own?
No. If they'd let that thing go after, if that thing went after network drives, we would have been fucked.
I had somebody out here who was fixing their computer and they got one of these ransomware viruses. Can't remember which one. As soon as they saw that, like, you know, there's something on there asking for money to get files back, pretty much, they immediately just shut everything off and turned off the machine. And then called me and had me come over and have a look. And
well, at least they did the right thing.
Yeah. And what they did there actually saved them because, like, it never actually managed to encrypt all the files on the hard drive.
Oh, like, so I guess were able to snipe the drive able on to, the machine and get their shit.
Yeah. I like not they lost maybe like 25-30% of their shit, but better than everything. Cover most of it. But leaving it running and like fucking around with it and shit like that is just causing you more headaches. Just shut it down.
Yeah, because even though our IT guys are dumb, the ransomware virus is actually was encrypting our network drives. And freaked out so much, they ran to the server room and physically unplugged them, so our backup wasn't affected.
Nice.
Awesome.
That is the correct response, sir.
Yeah.
Pull it all, do the James Bond thing, just run over and start yanking the cards out of the rack.
No.
All right. Next, it's funny, too, because some of the early versions of Tesla Crypt and Crypto Locker, the encryption wasn't that good, so people put out tools to get their shit back, right? And so they fixed all of them. And now, you know, people think, oh, it's just Crypto Locker. I can go download this tool, and why isn't this working? And so they sit there and try to do all these damn cleanups as opposed to, you know, just turning it off and, you know, bringing in somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. Preferably on a second machine and using, you know, slaving the drive as opposed to actually running an infected OS. But
yeah,
they make fun of me at work. They're like, yeah, don't ask him about what to do with the virus. He's going to tell you to format the machine no matter what. You can't trust it.
Yeah.
It's been compromised. How can you trust it again? Whatever. Next story. This is funny. A new weapon, it's from the New York Times, a new weapon for battling cell phones in theaters. They're giving the ushers laser pointers and telling them when they see somebody using their phone. Now, this is in Beijing. And the story is because some American performer who was touring over there saw this and was like, what the fuck? Because they start going into the anti-gun stuff. But, well, I thought somebody was, you know, aiming a gun over there because, you know, the laser sight. But they're giving ushers laser pointers, strong laser pointers, and telling them if they see somebody using a mobile phone, instead of running over and asking them to turn off the phone, just shine the laser pointer on their phone screen or on their arm.
Awesome.
And they're like, yep, we see you. Quit it. So, and I love the quote.
The longer they keep the phone out, you increase the intensity of the laser
until it eventually, you know, burns their retinas. I love the quote here. It's usually only a small fraction of the audience that we have to deal with, said Wang Chen, an employee at the Theater Affairs Department of the Shanghai Grand Theater. They can't help themselves, so we try to give them a gentle reminder so they know that, you know, so they know what they're doing. Zhu Chun, 27, who was in the audience for Carmen at the National Center for Performing Arts in Beijing last month, said, of course it's distracting, but seeing lighted up screens is even more distracting. I don't know, if you use, what's the program called that does the tint shifting at night? A lot of them use use the camera to see how much ambient light's in the room and not light up the phone screen real bright if it's dark.
Yeah.
So... what do you know about people with Apple Watches, though? You know, they do the Nazi salute and then look and see what time it is. So that's got to be more distracting than somebody whipping out a cell phone. Glancing at a phone to see what a message was, so. All right. Next one up is from Ars Technica. Just a quickie. So, the government has made a clerical error and accidentally released some paperwork they probably shouldn't have. In the summer of 2013, secure email service LavaBit was ordered by a federal judge to provide real-time email monitoring of one of its users. Rather than comply with the order, Levinson shut down his entire company when he said the government was seeking would have endangered the privacy of all of his 410,000 users. Later, he did provide the key as a lengthy printout in very tiny type. If anybody doesn't remember the story, it was hilarious. He was doing malicious compliance. It was fantastic.
The equivalent of paying your fine in pennies.
Yes. In court papers related to the LavaBit controversy, the target of the investigation was redacted, but it was widely assumed to be Edward Snowden. He was known to have been using the service, and the charges against the target were espionage and theft of government property, the same charges Snowden faced. Now, what was widely assumed has been confirmed in documents posted to the federal PACER database this month. The government accidentally left his email, ed_snowden@lavabit.com, unredacted for all to see. The error was noted by the website Cryptone earlier this week. Whoops. It's one of those cases of, well, everybody knew what we were up to. We might as well just, you know, not care.
Yeah, they weren't fooling anyone.
I don't know. Nobody have anything on that one?
Just general governing competency.
Yep. All right. This next one is pretty funny. This is actually from Fox 17 Nashville. Neighbor steals PlayStation. Nashville, Tennessee. A mid-state gamer is thankful for connecting his PlayStation 4 to his cell phone after it helped recover his stolen console. According to the arrest affidavit, the man returned from vacation last week to find his Cheyenne Boulevard apartment in Madison had been broken into and burglarized. Among the items stolen were his PS4, two televisions, a laptop, and other assorted items. After a few days, the victim's phone alerted his PS4 had been turned on and showed that it was still connected to his own Wi-Fi. Knowing that the console had to be closed to be hooked up, the victim called the police and said he believed his neighbor across the hall was responsible for the theft. Police responded, searched the apartment, belonged to Philip T. Booker, and that's his mugshot in the page here, which I don't know if I've probably seen a more punchable face, but I really would like to punch that guy in the face. That look he's making at the camera there. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's not just me then. Cool. I was afraid I might have been racist there for a second.
No, he thinks he's owed something. He's one of those arrogant bastards.
Yeah. Police responded, searched the apartment. Inside, police found the victim's PS4, laptop, and a bag of marijuana. Booker admitted to shouldering open the man's apartment door and pawning his two two televisions and a tablet. So
shouldering open.
He beat the door down.
that's a pretty soft term for knocking somebody's door down.
Well, he doesn't look like he's a small man.
No.
His mugshot there. So, you know, maybe he just kind of fell on it and it broke open. I mean,
completely accidental. TVs followed him home because they were hungry and lonely.
Well, I couldn't just leave them out there. The door was left open.
Yeah, the door
Somebody
was broken.
Else could just come in and take them.
I just love that, you know, this shit was hooked up to the Wi-Fi. Oh, look, I got internet now, too. Awesome. What I like even more is that the police actually responded. The police were like, oh, look, it's on its Wi-Fi. It must be nearby. And, you know, actually searched the nearby apartment.
Yeah.
That's cool. Because used to be you'd call the cops and be like, yeah, I've got the evidence right here. Somebody was, you know, on my Wi-Fi and blah, blah, blah. They'd either wouldn't listen to you or they'd think you were doing it. So, I mean, it's awesome that they're...
Then again, like, it is a pretty easy arrest for the cops. Like, it's not like they have to do a whole lot of footwork. Like, well, you know, it's kind of like just a gimme.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd be willing to bet it probably took all of 5 seconds to look up the guy's history and be like, yep, let's go check.
Yeah.
Usually if somebody... I'm not trying to be mean, but usually if somebody, you know, breaks in and, you know, pawns shit and keeps the rest of it, it's usually not the first time they've done it, you know?
Yeah.
So...
It's almost as good as a time at work. Guy stole someone's cell phone. We knew he had it. He did admit to having it, so we phoned it, and it was in his pocket.
I swear, I didn't know it was there.
Why is that going off? I don't know. What's going off in your pants? That's a dildo, sir.
Wow, that's just awesome.
All right.
Yeah.
I just enjoyed that story. So, shows about shit that interests me. Damn it, I don't care if it's stupid. Next story up is from The Intercept of all places. So, the Maryland Court of Special Appeals on Wednesday upheld a historic decision by a state trial court that the warrantless use of cell site simulators or stingrays violates the Fourth Amendment. The trial court has suppressed evidence obtained by warrantless use of a stingray, the first time any court in the nation has done so. Last April, a Baltimore police detective testified that the department had used stingrays 4,300 times since 2007, usually without notifying judges or defendants. The ruling has the potential to set a strong precedent about warrantless location tracking. Police should now be on notice, said Nate Wessler, a staff attorney at the ACLU Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project. Accurately explain your surveillance activities to a judge and get a warrant or risk your evidence being thrown out. So, you know, the rest of the article gets a little political, but the short version is a court in Maryland has said that simply having your cell phone turned on is not consent to being tracked, at least from the police.
Good man. Yeah. There's at least one competent judge left in the world, or at least one judge that's occasionally competent left in the world.
or at least once.
So...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need a warrant for the individual person you are attempting to track. So, you show up to a judge and say, "Hi, I think Madman is burying vacuum cleaners in big farms, and we need to stop this mass murdering bastard."
We're going to have to come up with new code phrases. I think we've used that one too many times on this show. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Because we're not actually talking about burying vacuum cleaners filled with raspberry juice. We're actually talking about bearing shop vacs full of raspberry jam.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still confused at where you get all this jam.
Some jam leaks out of them when you hit them with a brick.
I was going to say you'd be amazed what you find in the dumpsters at a Kroger, but Madman's explanation was a little bit more accurate. So...
But back to the story, I'm just, like, I don't know enough about the American law system. Like, what does this mean for, like, the rest of the country? Does
Nothing,
this, like...
it means it's going to go to the next level of court.
Oh, okay.
It means that somewhere else in the country, a lawyer can make this argument that before this judge in Maryland, it was struck down.
Right.
So there is a precedent. It doesn't actually ban it outside of that jurisdiction.
Okay.
It's going to move up to the next appellate level.
Yeah.
And if that court upholds it, then it may affect multiple states directly.
Okay. Yeah.
But I don't believe my state is in this appellate region. So in my state, it wouldn't directly affect the cops, but a lawyer in my state may make the argument that in Maryland, a judge threw this out, and a judge in my state would be more likely to listen to the argument.
Right.
Now, it's not going to have nationwide implications until it makes it to the Supreme Court. And if the Supreme Court upholds it, then it's just blanket illegal everywhere. But right now, everyone in that jurisdiction is looking at it. And then if the appellate court in that jurisdiction upholds it, then every state in that jurisdiction is really looking at it.
So, unfortunately, we just lost Hugo, but that's okay. He'll be back, I'm sure. So, there's some nice quotes here that are from the rest of the article. Like I said, it gets a little political, but after the trial court threw out the stingray evidence, the Maryland Attorney General alarmed civil liberties groups by arguing that anyone who keeps their phone turned on is consenting to being tracked by police.
Wow.
The ruling, which has not yet been issued, will presumably reject that argument. During the oral argument before the appellate court on in February, one of the judges called the police's pinned register application a completely false document and completely disingenuous. So it could also be argued that the police didn't do the paperwork properly to use this stingray, and that's why it was thrown out.
I'm hoping it's not a paperwork error on stingrays. I want it to be an actual judgment against blanket use of mass surveillance.
Well, I think the judge was going for that. Because they actually said, you know, House Oversight Committee Chairman Jason Chaffetz said, get a warrant. Which, man, how do you get a warrant for, like, okay, we're going to set up a stingray at this, you know, baseball game or NFL game or pick your sport. And we know there's going to be 100,000 people there. And we're hoping to catch anyone who we've got a warrant out on. So.
What this would do is it would pretty much end the use of stingrays, because you would just get a warrant, go to whatever telecom company and say, this is the person we're looking for. They're not actually looking for any individual person with a stingray. They're just doing mass capture.
Yep.
And again, if you're doing something wrong, you deserve it.
But are you willing to let some government douchebag dig through all of your shit to make sure you're not doing anything wrong?
They do it anyways. And I'd have nothing to hide, so, yeah, whatever.
Well, my problem is, that whole, the government can look through everything to see if you're doing something wrong, that arguably cost Mitt Romney the election when he was... The government didn't have proof that any company, any of the PACs that were supporting him were doing something wrong, so they just stopped everyone until they audited everyone. And that threw an election. So, no, I don't want them to blanket assume everyone is guilty. Because that does have real-world implications. I want them to show up and say, you have done something wrong. This is why we believe it. Now, let us look through your shit to prove it.
Yeah, whatever happened to innocent until proven guilty?
Yeah, that's old-school thinking. Privacy.
That's
dead.
Too hard.
You know what, BSV? That is the actual answer. I used to rail on that. I haven't done that line in a long time. But yeah, that is absolutely law enforcement going, that's too hard. That is absolutely what that is.
Yeah.
All right, next one up is interesting. It's from The Guardian. Advertising could account for half of the data usage for people reading articles on their smartphones, according to a study by Enders Analytics. The small-scale study looked at six unnamed popular publishers, both with and without an ad blocker, and found that anywhere between 18% and 79% of the data downloaded was from ads. In addition, anywhere between 6% and 68% of the data downloaded was from JavaScript, which is used to deliver more interactive elements of both editorial and advertising on pages. The report said, on the basis of this investigation, an estimate that says advertising accounts for half of all data used by publisher pages on iPhones does not look unreasonable. The publisher mobile pages are bloated, and advertising is an enormous part of that. Mobile data usage has become more central to the debate about ad blocking since Mobile Operator 3 announced it was working with an Israeli company, Shine, to implement ad blocking at a network level for its customers. And blah, 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 blah. The cool part is somebody actually did a study on this. And you know, you think about it, most people are not on unlimited data plans. You know, you have 3 gig or 5 gig or whatever your plan
prepaid
covers. Prepaid. Yeah, or they're prepaid. So,
or they're throttled after so long.
Yeah.
Right, right. So, you know, you don't get unlimited high-speed data. You might get unlimited data, or it could be worse. It could be like, okay, you get your 3 gig, and we never slow you down, but once you go over 3 gig, we start charging you $10 for extra every gig after that, which I think I remember seeing a plan like that. Oh, wait, that was Comcast. I think it was 10 gig on Comcast's part. But anyways, you know, I mean, since every ISP is wanting you to get into the minutes game. Yeah. I just ad blocking at this point makes, again, I always suggested it more for, you know, the blocking. Yeah, most ads are where your pop-ups and you know, screen takeovers and banner ads are where you get all this drive-by download shit, right?
Yeah.
So just keeping the machine clean is why I've always suggested an ad blocker. But the fact that he's like, oh, yeah, and they waste half your data. It's like, holy crap, right?
And now you're paying to see the ads. It's not just they're trying to get you to sell to buy stuff. You're paying to have things sold to you.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely moved past that, oh, it's a slight inconvenience, to you are costing me money.
So here's the question, though. How should websites and other online publications monetize? Because advertising is the common way to do it, but it's getting stupid.
Advertising still works perfectly fine. They just need to adapt. You can't just go, like, shove an ad down somebody's throat. And, like, they've actually shown that, like, people just don't really pay attention to these ads either. Like, it's a very small percentage of the population that does. So you're basically, like, you know, shoving this down the throat of everybody, and, like, nobody's even paying it any attention. Like, I go out of my way to avoid ads, like, because I know, like, they're just not trustworthy. You know, everybody's trying to put a spin on something to sell you something. Like, it's, you can't trust what they're telling you because they're trying to sell you something. So it's, but, like, I think product placement and, like, product partnerships and stuff like that, like, you see a lot of YouTubers and stuff, like, somebody's doing, like, a home improvement YouTube channel, and, like, they'll be sponsored, like, they'll get sponsored by some tool fucking company, and they'll set up their shop with all these tools, and, like, they rarely even mention them, but they're using their tools, so, like, you've got this, like, you know, subconscious product placement, and I think they need to start getting creative with that sort of thing, and, like, actually, like, you can still do ads, and you can still, you know, influence people to buy your stuff. You just can't be so overt about it.
Well, I don't care if somebody's being overt if they're being honest about it. It's like, yeah, I'm trying to sell you this, and, you know, here's why it's good. You know, the actual function of original function of advertising, as opposed to, hi, I'm going to manipulate you and try to force you into buying this and make you feel bad for not buying this and question your manhood for not driving the right car and so on and so forth. So,
yep. No, I agree with that.
I mean, yeah, it's the Futurama reference, right? Where the, you know, the guy says, "Oh, I'm just looking," and it's good. Nobody, you know, you don't mind people questioning your sexuality. It's just like, you know, holy shit!
I don't
see
advertising as being force. They're not force. I don't see advertising as being force for me to buy something.
No, they're not. They're trying to manipulate you into doing something.
And if you're that weak-willed in order and you manipulate that easily, then you're a moron.
No,
that's
like,
something you have to work on yourself.
Oh yeah, and like I said, like I avoid that, but it's still annoying. Like I don't like people trying to force me to do something, or, you know, trying to manipulate me into doing something. And, you know, like, whether you know it or not, like, everybody's impacted by it. Like things like his and hers razors and his and hers deodorants and stuff like that. That never even existed until relatively recently. And they're just like, how can we sell twice as much product? Oh, I know. Before it was just like one razor totally socially blue normal. And everybody one razor just shared pink. Yeah. But like, and now we like, that's like gross and nobody wants to do that. But that's not how it always was. There's all these kinds of things that they're coming up with that we're not even really aware of.
I can say water. from 100% standpoint, using a razor that a woman has used like for her legs or other bits and then trying to use it on your face again, you're going to get cut. Plain and simple.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
And the surface area dulls it?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it, no, it's totally different. I totally concur, yeah.
And from the other thing, I'm sorry, when I bought actual, you know, scented, I don't buy scented anymore, but that's a different topic, but when I bought scented, I'm sorry, I don't want to smell like a freaking flower.
Well, on the razor, so it made that's sense. Just changing razor blades.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you think about it, people who buy razors who really shave and know a thing about shaving buy a razor for a very specific reason. They don't go out and just buy the cheap razor that's out there that can do the job of, you know.
I actually went back to... I
think we're kind of getting sidetracked here.
The old-fashioned safety razor. Just the single-bladed mm-hmm. safety razor.
Yeah.
I regret bringing up the razor example.
No, you're fine. But from the standpoint of marketing, it made sense, though. Think about it.
Electric razor for a while. I think I need to go back to a blade, though.
Oh, all I can use now is an electric razor. I can never use another straight razor ever.
That is strange.
Heart attack, blood thinners.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. A good point.
Cut myself. Massive amounts of blood squirting everywhere. Horror story in the bathroom.
Looks like you have been you taking care of usual. A vacuum cleaner in your bathroom.
Yes. Yes.
So, next story.
But yeah, my big problem is the being charged data usage. A way around it, I think Patreon is going to be a way a lot of companies are moving to, or at least individuals that you want to support.
Yeah. I've joked before, maybe we really ought to move decking into a YouTube channel and, you know, see if we can get some product placement.
I don't think you need to be on YouTube for Patreon, do you?
No, you don't.
Like a different thing?
You got Twitch people doing it now. They're moving away from the Twitch standard of PayPal because PayPal, you know, you get charged for chargebacks. Patreon, you don't.
Right.
Wouldn't that be awesome? If we put up a Patreon and made enough to actually do G15 full time with a couple of people, it'd be fun, wouldn't it?
That'd be
I don't
cool.
do enough now with it to justify it, but it'd be fun.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be the first thing to spring up like that.
No, that's true, but I don't even know how many. I haven't looked at our listener stats. I don't even know how many listeners we have. It's less than 100. So.
Well, we haven't been active on the channel for a while. You're the only one still really active.
Yeah.
But next story. Let's get back to decking it.
Oh, we're decking it, all right. we just coined that. I'm going to have to open the next show. Now prepare to deck it. this is from thegeekpub.com. Is your data center protected from drones? I need the dramatic squirrel sound.
No, what you need is a shotgun cocking right now. That's how you protect your data center from drones. Bubba on the roof in a lawn chair with a cooler of Budweiser and a 12 gauge with burst shots.
Thank you, Static. Static is ready for the data center.
Yep.
Mine's upstairs or I would have grabbed it. Anyways, a drone flying over your data center is probably something you don't really think or worry about. Drones are literally flying everywhere all the time these days. They're definitely flying over the top of your data center, whether you realize it or not. I could also point out that Cessna airplanes and hot air balloons rigged with GoPros are also flying over your data center. So, Anyways, this guy flew his Phantom Pro over Facebook's Fort Worth data center. The aerial footage from the Phantom turned out great. Someone was in the right position, and there was a little wind. He couldn't have been happier with how it turned out. So he put together a video for the Geek Pub, it's his YouTube channel. And he's even a few days later, he got a message from Facebook asking him to take a tour of the facility. He ended up on the phone with a guy a few days later, and they so pretty much this guy flew his drone. He's got a YouTube channel. I've seen a couple of his videos. He's got some decent videos. He makes a cool table with like a compartment in it. He flew his drone over the Facebook data center, and they called him. Like, dude. So here's the thing, though. They literally are, you know, trying to figure out what to do about it, and they're right that about the only way to do something about it would be to, either have Bubba up there at the shotgun or do radio jammers or whatever. But he's talking about somebody mapping the entrances and exits and trying to figure out ways to SE in their way inside. I'd be more worried about somebody strapping a Raspi to the damn thing and using it to look for Wi-Fi and other ways into the data center.
Yeah.
So what he's doing with the drone can literally be done by a guy walking around the outside of their property with a pair of binoculars.
True. I just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, you know, like... A drone hacking device. That's kind of a neat idea.
Wouldn't be
like, even just like a rogue access point that floats around that waits for people to connect to, whatever.
You grab like a Wi-Fi pineapple and a cell phone battery pack and strap it to a drone that's able to carry the weight of the thing, like one of the Phantoms.
I'm seeing all these drones now where like they've got that kind of the gecko feet on them. So they can actually go and just, like, perch on a wall somewhere. So you're no longer limited by the battery. You can just go... you still are, but you have greatly extended battery life.
Yeah, you just go land it somewhere and wait a day or two. Retrieve it. Or hell, you know, I mean, if you know what... 3D printing and, you know, maybe using some scrap bits, you might be able to make a drone on the cheap that you don't really care about getting back. Just wanted to plant the device on the roof with like a little solar panel to keep the Raspi going, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, even
better, you could just build a drone that's big enough to just go drop off a package.
Go ahead, Mehmet.
Let's say there's already specs online for 3D printing most of a drone.
That's true. That's very true. So, I'm just thinking, you make a disposable drone that you don't care about getting back. It drops off a Raspi strapped to an old cell phone or GSM modem or something so you can get to it even though, you know, it's far enough away, and then you're remote hacking whatever building you just dropped that on, data center or not. Because, truthfully, most data centers should not have that much in the way of Wi-Fi. They might have it for the people who work at the data center, but it should not be connected to the general, you know, the general network of the place. It should be separate. But, you know, expecting people to get networking right, yeah. I mean, if people got networking right, I wouldn't have a job. So, office buildings. Go ahead, BS.
On a similar thing, I would just want to now see a drone with a USB connector plug itself into a computer now.
You fly through the door, hope nobody notices as you fly the drone. Those things are kind of loud. I'm not gonna lie. It's like, what's that noise? Oh, that's just Bill. You know, you got the lab coat draped off of it, so nobody pays it any mind.
Well, you just go on a tour, drop it off somewhere, and at night, turn it on and
fly it around. I like it. Somebody comes out. What's that hanging out at the hospital's data rack over there? Ah, don't worry about it. So,
I'm kind of weird. I don't see the aerial photography as an issue.
I could see it if you like were concerned about entrances and exits or somebody doing something or I suppose if you really wanted, if you were really wanting to disrupt a data center, like you really didn't like Facebook or you wanted to pull a Fight Club, you could strap something other than a Raspi to your drone.
Yep. I think a lot of public plans for buildings, aren't they public record? A lot of plans for buildings, aren't they public record?
Some of them. Depends on the building, I think. So, anyways, let's do this last story here. This is from unilad.co.uk, which is unfortunate because I thought it had the much more cool name of unlaid.co.uk when I first found the article earlier today. The man behind the fappening has finally been caught. So the infamous release of images became known as the fappening. Dozens of famous women, including Jennifer Lawrence, Kate Upton, and Anna Kendrick, had their private pictures leaked to the entire world, and understandably, they were not happy. Ever since then, the FBI and other officials have been hunting the people behind the hacks, and today they've announced they found the person responsible. And he's already pleaded guilty, the New York Daily News reports. So, Ryan Collins, 36, faces between 18 and 5 months in prison, or 18 months and 5 years in prison, as federal prosecutors say he used a phishing scheme to get illegal access to more than 100 email accounts, many of which belong to female celebrities. So, now, even if he does go to prison, he's going to be one of the most popular guys in there. And, but yeah, they're trying to figure out whether it's a hacking crime or a sex crime because he released the nudes.
It's a hacking crime.
Yeah.
They were not raped. It was a hacking crime.
Well, apparently Jennifer Lawrence told the Vanity Fair that it's not just a scandal, it's a sex crime. It's disgusting. And it's like, yeah. So,
it's a scandal. It's illegal. He should be punished. It's not a sex crime.
Come on, slap on the wrist. Move on.
Slap on the wrist. Tons of high fives. I mean, that's what it'd be. They'd slap him on the wrist and high five him. It's like, yep, that was really bad what you did. By the way, I can't even finish that joke. It's horrible. Oh, shit. Somebody else make a joke before I do go into dojo. Come on.
I don't know about a joke, but I'm not entirely certain it's a completely joking matter. What if you were going after, I don't know, credit cards or something with phishing? It's people do. The activity itself that should be punished.
Yeah, the fact that he released, you know, the celeb pictures as opposed to getting in and doing tax fraud or credit fraud or identity theft. I mean, yeah, he could have been doing much worse things with that kind of scheme, and people do it every day. That's the thing. He's like, okay, yeah, they caught the guy from the fappening. What about the people doing all the fake IRS tax returns, or the people doing credit card scams, or the assholes who call every once in a while pretending to be from, you know, the Windows support center?
Yeah, with the number of people, I could see him getting a couple years out of it and it being justified. I don't think it should be ruinous. So, like, the per image, I think, would be stupid. But if there's, like, 4 or 5 victims, I could see him being charged separately with each victim and spending a couple years in prison for it.
It's a victimless crime. Come on.
There is one pretty important point that we should point out. I don't remember the details of it, but I remember there being speculation that some of the actresses were underage at the time he released their photos. So that could have some more serious repercussions.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure. They took the photos themselves.
Yeah, but he was distributing them.
Doesn't matter. Jennifer Lawrence was sending them to her then boyfriend, right? So she's emailing them. So any network engineer has access to that now at whatever email facility.
Assuming you know a certain level of encryption and all that, yeah. But yeah, whoever runs that email server, certainly.
But only her or her boyfriend could morally or legally have access to that. It was taken by her, so it's her property. She gave it to him, so it's his property. If he decided to release it, then there would have been nothing wrong. But this guy did something wrong. I mean, it's cool because everyone wants to see hot chicks, so we're going to laugh about it. But this is wrong.
It is wrong. You're right. And again, it does come back to there were, you know, speculation that some of the actresses were underage. So that's an issue.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that plays out.
I'm saying with his issues, it's literally just the computer crimes. Because he didn't take the underage photos.
I don't know enough about.
This is literally just going to be decided by the courts, but it's still my opinion on it.
Yeah, I'm just saying I don't know enough about how. You know, usually being caught with child porn is horrible, and I don't know how it goes from there. You know what I mean? So, anyways, let's do this. All right, got three quickies for Digital Dojo today. First one is a neat project called Subsearch. Subsearch is a command line tool designed to brute force subdomain names. It is aimed at penetration testers and bug bounty hunters and have been built with a focus on speed, stealth, and reporting. So this thing, you give it a host name or a list, and then you give it a list of the DNS resolvers that you want it to look against, and it will go out and attempt to brute force all of the subdomains that potentially exist for that primary. So, you know, we'd give it galaxy15radio.com and see, you know, what all it could find. So if we had set up, say, admin panel, which doesn't exist, and neither does admin, by the way, at least it shouldn't, admin.galaxy15radio.com. I'm looking at the wrong website. Trying to read ahead and discuss this thing. So you give it that, and it tries to find all the subdomains. So, you know, mail.galaxy15radio.com and you know, madmansecretstash.galaxy15radio.com and so on and so forth. So, anyways, you know, it'll try to find all those for you, and usually you can find like an admin or a backdoor or, you know, other domains. So maybe their main website is all locked up, but if you happen to find, say, their internal Git server, you know, and a lot of times server names, they're, you know, if they're internal servers, if they're not intended for public consumption, they'll have weird names, you know, Harry Potter characters or whatever, to Lord of the Rings locations to try to go from there. So sometimes you'll find like Mordor.whateverwebsite.com, and it turns out Mordor is their database, right? So yeah, security by obscurity doesn't really work, especially with tools like this. So no thoughts on that?
Make sure that you don't have things on the internet that you don't actually want on the internet.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, if you're going to expose something to the internet, make sure it's properly set up, and that, you know, if some random asshole on the internet finds it, they can't take out your entire infrastructure. Just a thought. Next one up, not really too much to cover on it. Basically, Nmap 7.1 has been released. Some new scripts. Big thing here is they did some bug fixing, and they've added hundreds of operating system and version fingerprints to their service identifiers. That's cool. And I'm guessing that nobody else uses Nmap but me.
Wrong crowd, man. Again, yet again, wrong crowd.
You need Sard. You need Sard here right now.
Okay, fine. Then I guess nobody's going to care about setting up a firewall for your home network on a Raspberry then either, huh?
That one was cool. Kind of interesting.
Okay. So this is an article on opensource.com. Although the Raspberry Pi 3 is announced, the 2 is still has plenty of life and is more than suitable for many interesting and useful tasks. The author has a few Raspberry sitting around exploring other interesting projects, such as replacing a very old single-core 64-bit rack mount server that the author uses for his primary firewall and router. So, you know, he's pulling out this thing and putting in a Raspberry 2 to be his firewall. So he installs CentOS on it and adds a second network interface using a He put a gigabit Ethernet dongle on there, which I'm not really sure why, since it's a USB 2 interface. Probably just what he had laying around. But the rest of it is a write-up of config, getting IP tables going, and actually setting up a Raspi as a firewall.
I actually might even do that. That's something that's all very awesome to me. I've often thought about doing something like that.
Well, the firewall in your little home router is pretty basic and usually terrible, because what will happen is your little home router will have an HTTP interface on it for management. You know, you go to a web page to manage.
Yeah.
And they find bugs in these things all the damn time, and they'll find some random port that's open to the internet that if you know the right strings to send to it, you get full control of this router, right? And this happens all the time. Or worse, you know, you click something on a web page and it runs some JavaScript, and because you never changed the defaults, it goes to 192.168.1.1, logs in with admin Linksys, and then starts opening shit up to the world. So there's that.
Yeah, and there's other uses for something like that too. Like you can go install your VPN, like set up your VPN on it and stuff like that, so you can actually just like redirect all your network traffic through. So that way, you like if, even if you're using like a Chromecast or you know something else that you can't use a VPN with, it'll still redirect the traffic and you know whatever.
And you can set up something like a Pi-hole as well, where you know have your ad blocker bad guy. You just go get some of the block lists from some of the various sites out there that have them. You can have your Raspi blocking known bad guy sites. So even if you do get a pop-up or a bad page or something, maybe it won't resolve and install the CryptoLocker variant.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the Pi-hole project, which I mentioned just a second ago, which is a Raspi with that intention that replaces your DNS server with a Raspi so that you can do ad blocking as well. So, if you know, this is kind of a manual way to do it because you're taking advantage of the fact that it's a little Linux box, right? But, they're basically grabbing a Raspi, putting a USB adapter on it, and making a firewall out of it. The fact that here's a nice little write-up of how quick and easy it is to do, that's pretty cool. I think he said he was using a Raspi 2 for this, but depending on how busy you're, or you know, if you've got like DSL or something, you probably get away with using an original Raspi for something like this.
Yeah.
But if you got decent speed network connection, you probably want to use a 2. But you could actually even get fancier and add more USB Ethernet interfaces and set up subnets. So maybe you have one subnet for your, you know, like you could get two routers, well, or Wi-Fi access points. And set up the Raspi to separate them. So the Raspi is between your internet and, you know, both your, like a little Linksys box or whatever. And then, you know, Linksys box run one manages your home network and, you know, your machine and your TV and your NAS or whatever. And then, you know, network two is for guests and family to use, or, you know, if you run any servers, it'd be a good place to put that kind of stuff. That way you kind of separate your personal stuff from stuff you share.
It's a good idea.
So, I mean, because what he's got here is a very basic. If you know Linux networking, you're looking at that and go, "Yep." But it's a nice write up for what it is, and it's not a bad concept if you happen to have a Raspi kicking around. Because a lot of people ordered one and then didn't know what to do with it. So, or they thought they'd set up a media center and then they found out it wouldn't work quite as well as they wanted, or you know, whatever. So, and they're not expensive.
I have no idea who you're talking about with that comment.
I was actually talking about static, but if that applies to you too, Swab.
I may or may not have a Raspberry Pi 2 kicking around, collecting dust.
I don't.
It's looking for a home.
Oh, that's right. You sold yours, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess I should stop making fun of that.
Hmm.
I'm out. That's all I've got for tonight. So, let's see. I've accused Madman of being a hitman. I've made fun of Static a few times. Lump Suave in there with it. BSV, I can't think of any personal insults for you at the moment, dude.
I think I'll survive. And I won't have to see what the big red button does.
Does anybody have anything before I close this out?
Hit it.